Welcome to another episode of the Bukhari Sellers Podcast. First of all, I need to say thank you to everybody who voted for us for the NAACP Image Awards. Make sure you continue to vote. Thank you for the nomination. And today, like most days on this show, one of the things we pride ourselves on is having guests that are smarter than the host. And we have arranged that again, none other than Kurt Wagner. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Man, I am doing great. So my show is unique in that I ask all of our guests the same first question, which is to walk us through the arc of your career. Walk us through each of your career stops since finishing Santa Clara College.
Yeah, sure. My first job, kind of lucked into it actually, was covering tech for Fortune magazine out in San Francisco. And I didn't really care a ton about tech, to be honest with you, but I went to school, as you mentioned, at Santa Clara, which is in the Bay Area. And, you know, Bay Area is tech central, right? And so that was sort of the opportunity that presented itself. And one of the best bits of advice I got from someone was basically like, if you want to write, just write. Like, don't, you know, worry too much about the topic. Like, you can always sort of maneuver once you get your foot in the industry, but just take what you can do and run with it. So I got in the door at Fortune. Stayed there about a year, went to Mashable, which is where I started covering social media. For those who don't know, Mashable is sort of like a digital site that actually started to cover the social industry. And then I got a real big break because a woman by the name of Kara Swisher had seen some of my work at Mashable and reached out to ask if I wanted to cover social media for Recode, which was the tech publication she had recently started. And that was just like a huge opportunity for me because you know, I was very young. I was like 24 years old, maybe. And Kara was just this force of nature in the tech world. And I kind of rode her coattails for a few years and made a ton of introductions through her and got a job at Bloomberg about 5 years later, which is where I'm at now and have always stayed in the tech world just because it feels like it's a really logical, you know, way to jump from one thing to the next is you stay with what you know, which is what I've been doing. And here I am finally writing a book, which is exciting.
There you go. Let's talk about it. That's in the business. That's what we call a segue, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
new book, Battle for the Bird. I used to love the bird. I'm not in love with X, but that's my personal opinion. We'll talk about that as we go. But let's talk about your book, Battle for the Bird, Jack Dorsey, Elon Musk, and the $44 billion fight for Twitter's soul. How long did it take to write this book? And how did you get so much access to employees who were witness to Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter?
Yeah. The physical writing of the book only took about 3 months. I powered through. I was fortunate enough to have book leave. So I literally
Whoa, back.
Yeah.
You wrote a book in 3 months.
I wrote the book in 3 months. Now, I will say that I did a ton of reporting, groundwork, all of that stuff leading up to it. But the actual writing itself, I was just like a man possessed. I showed up at the coffee shop every single day, wrote until I you know, was starting to get a little bleary eyed. And then I'd come home and pick it back up again later that night. So I was on a rush, man, because this story was unfolding in real time. And it was only getting more and more interesting every day that I was showing up to write. And I felt like it needed to be out ASAP. So I was doing that. And then from an access standpoint, I got really fortunate because this is fortunate for me, the journalist, I will say, wasn't fortunate for a lot of the employees because tons of people got laid off. And like Elon showed up, he fired half the staff, he eliminated the board, he got rid of the executive team. And when you're writing a book and you suddenly have thousands of employees at the company you're writing about who are no longer employed there, who are eager to talk and tell their story, I happen to be sort of at the right place, right time for that kind of thing.
Who is that? And I ask a lot of authors this, but you know, when you write the book, who you're writing the book for, and then who consumes it, often they don't always line up. But who is this book written for, and what do you want the audience to take from it?
I think it's a good question. I thought about that a lot, and it would be sort of easy to say like, you know, I wrote it for the tech community, but to be honest with you, the tech world sort of already knows this story, or at least was following this story pretty closely as I was writing, and so I kind of wanted to take it like one step further removed from that and say, you know, maybe you know what Twitter is. Maybe you even have a Twitter account. But that's sort of the extent of your knowledge, right? Like you know the service is important culturally, you know it matters politically, but you know maybe that's where the story ends for you. And why I wanted to do that is one, it's just a much larger audience, of course, than sticking to the tech world. But two, I just feel like this story is really important, and it was not reaching people outside of, you know, your classic tech employee base. And so I thought that, you know, the more accessible I could make it as I was writing it, the more successful the book would ultimately be.
For people who may not know how it happened, when did Elon Musk first set his eyes on Twitter? And why did it, you know, like, it was weird. It's like he sent a tweet out and then got locked.
It happened quick.
Like, yeah. Explain.
Yeah.
How it came from like a tweet to, you know, making my good friend extra $900 million.
So I'll bring you back to January of 2022. At this point, there's something interesting that happens. Now, I don't know for sure that this is why Elon ultimately started buying Twitter stock, but the timing is certainly interesting. In January of 2022, he complained to then Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal about an account on Twitter called @ElonJet. This account was following his private plane, right? When it takes off, when it lands, where it's going. And Elon hated that. He hated that there was this account that was publishing his location in real time. So he complains to the company. The company doesn't do anything. Parag essentially ignores the request. And within a couple weeks, Elon is buying Twitter shares every single day. And there's some speculation that like this started as a way for him to gain some influence, gain some, you know, stake in the company so that the next time he complained, it would have a little bit more force behind it. And fast forward about 2 months, he shows up at the end of March of 2022 as the largest Twitter shareholder. And he kind of surprised the company, surprised the board. Like no one knew that he was amassing this massive stake of Twitter stock. And you might remember he agreed to join the board. They sort of tried to head this off. They were like, oh, hey, wow, largest shareholder, welcome. We'd love to work with you. We'd love to partner with you. How about you join the board? And he said yes. And within a couple of days had a change of heart. And there's a bunch of stuff that happened behind the scenes that I think mattered there. But, you know, ultimately he had a change of heart, said, I'm not joining the board. In fact, I'm going to take this company private. Here's my offer. And the whole thing really snowballed quite quickly, as you know.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
So, this is a huge question, I know, but what are the key internal differences between the company that Jack Dorsey was running and the company we have now run by Elon Musk?
Yeah, I think that culturally they're night and day different. Jack Dorsey's Twitter was very open to a fault. They were slow. Like they, you know, everyone had a voice that needed to be heard, which was great. But obviously when you're trying to move a business quickly, that doesn't always equate, right? When you're trying to reach consensus on a lot of things, employees felt very empowered to speak out if they disagreed with leadership. Like it was not uncommon for, you know, Jack Dorsey to make a decision, employees to disagree with it. And frankly, like call them out on Slack, call them out at a company all hands, like have those very tough discussions. the Twitter that we now see under Elon, which is obviously now called X, is very different, right? There's one guy in charge. Everyone else's opinion is sort of a distant second. And if you call out the CEO, you're probably going to be fired and looking for a new job that next day. So I think just culturally, like there's a very different vibe to working there. I think people who work there now are real believers in Elon, real believers in the things that Elon stands for. But there's not dissent. There's not pushback in the way that there used to be with old Twitter.
You can see that play out. I will tell you this. When Elon Musk bought Twitter, I had 405,000 followers. I now have 398,000 followers, and I have not moved since he's purchased it.
Interesting.
It's the wildest thing ever. So I don't know if you know Elon, but tell him to stop banning
me or whatever. Do you pay for a blue check? Am I asking? Okay. I was going to say, maybe that's the thing. I don't pay for the blue check. And so I've also lost some followers, and I assumed it was sort of because I'm not being surfaced in the same way as a non-subscriber.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm not being surfaced, but I don't know. I mean, I pay for the blue check because I wanted the authentication, and I couldn't figure out how to do the Google double authentication thing, Majiggy. But I don't know. For people that have followed Tesla's rise, how much of Elon Musk's approach to X was shaped by his Tesla experience?
I think a lot of it. I mean, he loves to refer to his other companies when he's talking about X, when he's talking to X employees, he'll say like, well, here's how we did it at Tesla. Here's how we did it at SpaceX. Here are the kind of lessons learned from these other companies. The issue, in my opinion, is that they're vastly different businesses, and they operate incredibly differently. Like getting, you know, a million Teslas through the production assembly line is a different challenge than running X, right? And I feel like he's approaching these companies in much the same way, thinking like these are all engineering problems. These are all simply, you know, the more engineers and the more we lose sleep because we're working on this thing, the better it'll be. And I just don't really think that's how X works. X is a soft skills problem, right? It's a culture problem. It's a speech problem. And I'm not sure that he's ever fully, I don't think he agrees with that, or he certainly hasn't approached it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about his leadership style. It seems to be that he is, and it's wild. He doesn't really have a filter. Is that fair to say?
For sure. Yeah. Have you seen his tweets? I mean, he tweets whatever comes to mind.
He teaches streams of consciousness, and sometimes it's even disinformation on the largest social media site in the world. I mean, will there be any regulation on X? I mean, how do we prevent that type of stream of consciousness, even when it's coming from the CEO?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, obviously we've seen some, attempted regulation go through a couple laws that are actually being, you know, reviewed right now at the Supreme Court around like the role these platforms have in policing speech and what they can and cannot do. But really, you know, they have a lot of flexibility. They have a lot of freedom. And so when you are the boss and you make the rules, which is what Elon is in X's case, you know, he's not going to censor himself. Right. And so unless somebody he trusts convinces him that, hey, this is not good for business and this is not good for, you know, your own reputation or whatever, I just don't see a change happening there. And he's, you know, he's made it quite clear, like he doesn't seem to care that there's ramifications to the things that he's tweeting.
Here we go. So should we be discouraging acquisitions like Musk's acquisition of Twitter? I feel like social media platforms are almost like utilities where they become so large and so much a part of our lives that they really can't be left in the wrong hands. I don't think I want Bakari Sellers and Kurt Wagner owning, you know, your light company.
That'd be fun though.
It would be fun. Turn it off. Fuck around with us. It feels very much like X is in the hands of somebody who people have opinions on. Is there a public policy response that can prevent what happened to Twitter with Elon Musk? And if not, should there be?
You know, I don't think so. Not only is there not that I'm aware of, I don't think there should be either. That doesn't mean I disagree with what you're saying. It doesn't mean that I disagree with the power of these services. But I think it's really hard to say we're going to take private business and we're going to, you know, basically forbid anybody from either creating it or owning it, right? I think ultimately the user base is what has to kind of force this change, right? If people truly don't want to do this, they should leave X. They should go find another alternative, which there are. And don't get me wrong, they're not nearly as big and most of them aren't as good. But I really think the only way to do this is to sort of vote with your own attention, right, as a consumer. And people have been doing that forever, so that's like not a new idea. It's just I don't know. I guess it would be weird to me. It's hard for me to wrap my head around this idea that it's like, hey, you know, we all like and appreciate I don't know if this is a good example, YouTube, for example, right? We think it's a public good, and therefore, you know, the government should dictate who owns it or who doesn't. To me, that just feels, I don't know, that's a tough precedent to set.
I think so. I mean, I have my strong feelings about Elon Musk, but you get a slippery slope when you start
totally
government bigger. So how has, I mean, this is the $44 billion question. I mean, how has X been doing financially? Under Musk leadership, are they making more money now than before? What?
No, much less money actually. And you have to remember that under Twitter, old Twitter, about 90% of the business was advertising, right? And so, and not just advertising, but what's called brand advertising. So these are, you know, the household names that you're familiar with: Disney, Apple, Coca-Cola, and they're out there trying to build their reputation essentially on this service. And the issue has been, from my conversations with brands, the issue has been Elon himself and the fact that he tweets sort of, as we talked about, this stream of consciousness that is oftentimes controversial, could be sexist, it could be racist. Like, you just never sort of know what's going to come out of his mouth. And if you're a brand, it's a tough business partnership to have because you don't want to be associated with him on those days that he tweets something terrible. And so you sort of, you know, a lot of these brands are just simply saying it's not worth the risk. We're just going to sit this one out. And when 90% of your revenue comes from that business line, and a lot of those people are now sitting on the sidelines, we've seen the business fall dramatically. I think the estimate from last year, it's a private company now, so we don't get like earnings statements in the way we used to, but the estimate I heard from last year was about $2.5 billion in revenue, which would have been just over 50% of what it made 2 years ago before Elon showed up. So, I mean, we're talking a huge decline in business since he's been there.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com, Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
How much is this acquisition as a vanity project for Elon as opposed to an opportunity to make money? And do you think he'll ultimately sell it?
You know, he said from the beginning it wasn't an opportunity to make money. So if you believe him, you know, he's been pretty open about the fact that this is not a sort of a get-rich endeavor for him. He obviously doesn't need that. So I do think this is vanity or certainly like in the way that maybe a much less rich person might buy like a vacation home or something. Like, this is like Elon's vacation home because he's just on a different scale than everybody else.
Think about how this deal came together though. He just walked in the banks and now the banks are just gonna have to write this off. You and I couldn't do that.
No. Well, they want to continue to work with him, right? This is what happens when you've had success before and people assume you're gonna have success in the future, is they're willing to, you know, take risk and even take a loss if it means they maintain that relationship. So I think, like, if you're a bank, the last thing you want to do is just be on his blacklist. So you say, okay, shoot, we lost, you know, maybe they lose $1 billion or a couple billion dollars. I guess in the long run, they would say that's worth it to stay in Elon's orbit.
That's just nuts. How has Washington responded to Musk owning X? And talk about one of the last questions. Is it Section 230? Do you cover that at all? Or
we're certainly aware of it because it's such a foundational sort of like part of all of these networks and their ability to self-moderate, right? To self-police themselves. So what's the Washington reaction been? Honestly, I haven't really seen anything. I mean, they brought the CEO, Linda Yaccarino. She spoke at a congressional hearing a few weeks ago, but, you know, that was about sort of child safety online. It wasn't specific to X or anything like that. We've seen politicians sort of individually complain about, you know, some of X's anti-Semitism. I think it's going to be a bigger issue as we head to the 2024 election because they've really gotten rid of a lot of their misinformation policies. They're not really, you know, moderating in nearly the same way that they were 4 years ago. So, you know, you could imagine a world in which misinfo around voting, around election results, things like that starts to percolate on X. And if they don't really have anything in place, you know, that could be a huge issue. And that's when maybe we'll start to hear some politicians speak up. But again, as you know, I mean, this has always been a partisan issue. Like conservatives, Republicans generally don't have any problems with, you know, X being hands off, and Democrats tend to be very bothered by it. Right. So I just don't see that changing, even if it's Elon in charge or anybody else.
Most important question of the interview, before I let you get back to writing, I still don't even know how you wrote this book in 3 months. That's how can people buy the book and follow you on social media?
Oh, this is the most important question. Thank you. The book's available everywhere you buy books. You buy it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but of course, local bookstores are really cool. I actually have visited a few in the Denver area, which has been a treat for me to like see it on the shelf and sign it, which has been really cool. So definitely check it out. There's also Audible, of course, and there's ebook versions on Amazon. And then for me, I'm still on X. I'm at KurtWagner8 there, but I'm also on Threads. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not all that hard to find, and would love to hear feedback from folks who do pick up the book. I'm excited for people to read it.
What did Elon say about the book?
Elon didn't say anything about the book. I tried to get him a few different ways to chat and never heard back, and still waiting to see
Guy on red. It's terrible. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, listen. Kurt Wagner, thank you so much for joining the Bukhari Sellers podcast. Everybody, go out and get this book, Battle for the Bird, Jack Dorsey, Elon Musk, and the $44 billion, billion with a B, fight for Twitter's soul. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. As a ruthless king builds his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.